we want to, at this time, open up our Bibles or our pew Bibles to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4. Last week, we had given some New Year's resolutions with Epiphany in mind. By the way, happy Epiphany. That 12 days after Christmas, tomorrow will actually be that 12th day, but the Sunday closest is considered Epiphany Sunday. If we're scratching our heads, what is Epiphany? You need to relocate the church website, follow the sermons tab. We did talk about that last week and tie it into what could 2020 look like for my walk in relationship with God. We gave some godly goals, some New Year resolutions that may help us grow in our walk and relationship with God for 2020 in mind, with Epiphany in mind. And so we covered that last week. This week, we're going to talk about our word of the year for 2019 before next week unveiling our new word of the year. You've noticed we got the banners streamed out. We'll talk more about those next week and what they all symbolize in our story together these last 8 years. But before we get there next week, I've always found it helpful to relook back last year, 2019. Sabbath rest was our word of the year, and what does Sabbath rest mean, and what did we discover as a church family, and maybe as individuals, as it pertains to what Sabbath rest is all about. And so we want to talk about that today as we inch forward to the unveiling of the word of the year in 2020 next week. That banner is under lockdown, okay? Everyone's guessing. What's 2020 in? You know, there's guards, I don't doubt, posted outside the office. No one will see that until it's unveiled for us all next week in a fun sort of fashion as we learn together what following Jesus is about with a word of emphasis. So hopefully Bibles are open. Hebrews chapter 4, verse number 9. And we will just briefly touch on this and then camp out elsewhere as it pertains to Sabbath rest together. Hebrews chapter 4, verse number 9. Shout out that page number if you could so that we could all get there. 1,046. Let's read verse 9 together. It's our word of the year, the theme verse that the word of the year comes from. Let's read it together. Verse 9. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. One more time. Verse 9. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. I know we've joked at times there. Why do we call it a word of the year when the last couple of years has been words, plural, of the year, right? Well, part of the reason behind that is that Greek word, Sabbath rest, translated in two words in English, is actually one word in the original text. It's sabbatismos. And you can kind of hear that word Sabbath, the English word that we get of Sabbath, in that Greek word sabbatismos. It just simply means Sabbath rest. It's a carry-on of the Old Testament principle of Sabbath that carries over into the New Testament with this idea of an eternal rest in mind. And so it's a unique word used only one time in all of Scripture, and it was right here in Hebrews 4:9 that we just read. And so the context, if we were to read further the first 8 verses and what's following, is this eternal rest in mind. How does this idea of Sabbath carry over in this idea of an eternal rest? That is heaven. That is everlasting life that we talked about a moment ago in the Apostles' Creed together. And so that's part of the reason why last year, soon after Easter, we dedicated a whole month just to talk about what does the Bible actually say about heaven? This place of eternal rest. What is it like and what is it not like? Because we probably have some ideas of heaven. What does God say, the one that lives there? What does he say about heaven and that foretaste he gives? And so we talked about that for over a month together about what eternal rest is like. But with that said, there's a taste of eternal rest in this weekly rhythm that God has given us. And that's what we want to talk about today. What is Sabbath rest all about? Here's what we're going to get at in verse number 11. It says, let us therefore strive to enter that rest. Now that's interesting to me. We just read in verse number 9, there's a rest that remains for the people of God. Verse 10 is going to talk about God's rest, ceasing from labors, being connected to him in some way. And then verse 11 says, let us strive to enter that rest. That's a paradox to me. How do you rest and strive at the same time? And yet that's the paradox that Scripture leaves together. There's an intentionality. There's a striving, there's a seeking with this Sabbath rest in mind. And so as we look back to 2019, before we look ahead into 2020 together, I just want to talk about what are some ways that we strove to rest, to enter into this Sabbath cycle that God has given us together. We want to talk about that. We've done it a number of ways together, I would add in this last year. Part of the reason why we talked about Sabbath rest, right, was because we celebrated our Sabbath year together. 7 years together as pastor and parish alike, and we recognized it through sandwich board signs and some changes along the way that took place in those 7 years of just celebrating our Sabbath year together in that way. One of the more common ways is every seventh Sunday, right? Because Sabbath is associated with the number seven, every seventh Sunday, we just paused and did something a little out of the ordinary. We breathed. Seven deep breaths. And then we sang a song on breath and how that's connecting in our walk and relationship with God. And then we had some moments in the service, just 77 seconds of just ceasing from all activity, no agenda, just an all-out ceasing as we reflected on a scripture about Sabbath. Every seventh Sunday, we called it a Sabbath Sunday and just walked through that as an attempt to live into a small slice of what Sabbath may be about. And then, of course, maybe the most recent way, as we celebrated a Sabbath rest childcare event on two different dates, one in November, one in December, and the pictures maybe tell the whole story there. Parents, we invited them to enjoy a time of rest out, and the toilet paper was taken out, and people were tied up, and all those different things that thank you, Opal, for being a snowman in that fun Sabbath rest game in that way. But we just had fun together. As we learned the rhythm of work and rest, some grandparents of this church working to provide childcare, some young families just in getting to enjoy a time out of rest away and a gift card provided by the church in that way. Some small ways on a church level that we strove to enter into a rest with the intent in mind of discovering individually, what does God mean by Sabbath? And is this an outdated principle, or is this something that is wired in the DNA of a creature made by our Creator that He's inviting us into and to discover? And in the discovery of it, we discover more about Him and we discover more about our purpose here as we enter into this Sabbath rhythm. That's what I would argue Sabbath is all about. It's a discovery of who He is and where we fit in with lives of fire in this planet and in this place in that way. I'll share with you some wisdom from my aged grandmother. She's going to turn 90 years old in just over a month in this way. And she spent her whole life like working with kids. I'm going to give a comment of wisdom from my grandma as it relates to kids, but I just need to give the disclaimer. She's worked her whole life with kids. She's a retired school teacher, and so she had that in her realm working with kids. She raised kids of her own. We still allow her weekly to watch our own kids on the days that Julie comes into the office in this way. And so she spent her whole lifetime, still age 90, no joke, volunteers at Margaretta Schools once a week reading with kids in this way. And so no joke. Lifetime of kids in her repertoire, she always told Julie and I this as it relates to kids, and especially when they would act up. She would say, that kid is either tired or hungry. And I will tell you a personal disclaimer in the wake of New Year, where we allowed two of ours for the very first time to stay up bringing in the New Year. Yes, so often some behaviors that happen are either because they are tired or they're hungry. And focusing on the tired aspect, as it relates to rest, I wonder how much sometimes, not only kids speaking, but adult-wise, I wonder sometimes if some of our behaviors aren't just plain tied to that we're tired. A sense of burnout, a sense of resentment in some different way, maybe some of our actions, like personally speaking, if I've filled up on steak and mashed potatoes and fruit and like a good gourmet meal, Doritos, Fritos, Cheetos, those don't look as good. But when my system is empty, right, those things look very good and immediately in that way. And I wonder in some ways if those tempting things in life aren't connected to how we've been filling or not filling our spiritual tank. In this kind of Sabbath rest, I wonder if God's invite with Sabbath isn't restructuring a rhythm of our life that helps us make sense of temptation points around and helps fill us up with a purpose that isn't all consumed with the purpose itself, right? Like we don't derive our identity from what we accomplish or the trophy or the accolade in that way when we've got this proper rhythm and balance between work and rest and the two going together in this way. I think God's on to something. The creator of human life often is on to something in life, right? when he's given us instructions about how life works best. This book truly is a user manual for life. How many of you this past Christmas season has gotten something that came with a user manual in it? Thank you, Mitchell, for the only one that got a user manual this Christmas in that way. We got something just this past week that we had ordered that came with a user manual, and I am always so grateful for that because I half the time don't know how anything works in that kind of a way. And so this user manual is very helpful for me to discover and to unlock how it is to use something. This book, it's a user manual for life. God invented life. God invented the cosmos. God invented you and God invented me. And he knows best how this all works together. And so he's given us some instruction to help us out. And included in that instruction is this rhythm between work and rest and Sabbath, how that ties into that rhythm of a Sabbath rest for us to enter into. And so for the remaining time today, I want to break the sermon into three categories. We're going to look at some scriptures on Sabbath. What does God say in his user manual about Sabbath? And then we're going to look at some steps. How can I step into this? And it doesn't have to be an all or nothing thing, okay? Sometimes we just need to take baby steps in a direction, knowing that baby steps are growing us and maturing us in this kind of way. And so we're going to look at some scriptures. We're going to look at some practical steps. How do I incorporate Sabbath into my life? And then we're going to close on some stories of Sabbath because I left you 7 weeks ago, what was supposed to be our last Sabbath Sunday. I left you saying that there's a story on Sabbath that I just wanted to share with you that I think is pertinent to our life and to the world that we live in. So we'll close with some stories on Sabbath that I think applies to us. We always want to go back to this verse. Jesus had many discussions on Sabbath. I just want this floating on the back of your mind as we discuss everything that we discuss on Sabbath today. And so here, have this verse in the back of your mind in all this. Jesus said to them, in one such discussion on Sabbath, he said, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. That is, God didn't think of a day just to straitjacket humanity and say, you will follow this rule or else. No, God's intent for gifting us for the Sabbath was as a good gift for us. He knows some things about humanity and our need for this rhythm between work and rest, because if we go all one and all the other, we're going to get all off balance in this. I think we get a picture, an illustration, every single time we pull on our cell phone from our pocket about this rhythm between work and rest and these plug-in points needed. How many of you got a cell phone in your pocket? Leave it in your pocket if you do. But just take my word on this. At one point when you pull it out of your pocket in this way, you're going to see in the upper right-hand location this little thing called a battery. That reminds you, as great as this phone is, I mean, you can surf the net, you can call your friends, you can Facebook post, you can do almost anything, keep your social calendar, everything on this phone, right? But as good as this phone is, there's a finite aspect that keeps dwindling and dwindling and dwindling and dwindling down to the point where you let it get to 0%, you're going to have to plug in somewhere. Because as great as this device is, it ain't going to serve an inkling of usefulness if that is completely left uncharged. And I think in some ways, that's an illustration for who we are. We need plug-in points. We need outlets. Because as great as God has designed us to be as human beings, and as much as he's got planned and purposed for us to do, the charger is saying in a life that you try to do this in your own strength and your own steam, you're going to run out of it. You need a plug-in point. You need some outlets. God's given us a variety of outlets. One of these outlets is Sabbath keeping that keeps us connected to that greater source, that greater energy, that greater current that only is him in that way. And so I think in some ways, Sabbath is an important and needed outlet. In a world that is geared around our worth tying to our work, how many of you had heard? I know I'm jumping a million and one different directions there. We'll chase a rabbit eventually, okay? But let me just go with this one. How many of you had heard? I'd heard this oftentimes, at least in passing conversation in the Christmas time, about people that their greatest gift, what they most wanted for Christmas. This is a side conversation, but what they most wanted for Christmas wasn't what Amazon offered, it wasn't what Walmart offered. What they wanted was time. Anyone have that conversation or hear someone's conversation that people's request, the one item that they wanted was time. Maybe time with someone or just time to do what they wanted. I heard that in repeated conversation in the Christmas season, the biggest request just being time. And I wonder if Sabbath isn't God's gift of time, in some aspect, a time to replug and to recenter who God is and what he is up to define our worth outside of what we have to produce, to be reminded that we are human beings and not human doings, right? Sabbath is speaking all of that into our life and into our existence if we give it the space to do just that. And so we're going to get really practical how to do that in the middle part. Let's get to the scriptural part first. What does the Bible say about Sabbath and Sabbath in general? One of the Ten Commandments deals with this subject extensively. Exodus 20 says this: "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that's in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and he made it holy." The first thing that we learn about Sabbath, those of you that love crosswords, this is your Sunday, okay? We got tons of R's to throw your way. The first of those R's, the first thing that we learn scripturally about Sabbath is that Sabbath is a rule. It was a part of the Ten Commandments, right? Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. That's right after some of the rules about how we use or don't use God's name and the respect that we have for it. It comes right before some of the other rules that we hold that's common good for society, right? Like, don't murder, don't lie, don't take something, or don't sleep with your neighbor's wife. We genuinely agree that society works best, right, when those things don't happen. Isn't it good to be able to sleep at night, not wondering for your own safety or security if someone's going to stab you in the back through the night or break in your house or vandalize something? We genuinely agree, right? That society, that families, that individuals, it works better when those things aren't in motion, when people aren't murdering, when people aren't stealing, when people aren't stealing things or lying to one another, all those things. We agree with that, right? Part of the reason, right, why our founders will have in one of the frescoes the Ten Commandments, Moses holding the law in that kind of way. We agree. Our forefathers even agreed this. We agree for this 2,000 years later that it's generally agreed and good when those things aren't in place. And one of those factors in place on that Ten Commandments is an instruction about our rhythm of life. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. That is that there's an interchange between work and rest. Not all one, not all the other, but living into this weekly rhythm of an interchange between work and rest. And as you've probably heard it tritely before said, these aren't my words, these are words that you've heard in common conversation, that these aren't the Ten Commandments. These are the Ten Commandments, not the Ten Suggestions, right? Like, these are God's commands in life. And I'm going to say that with needing to deflate the air for a moment and remind you, God's commandments always come laced with God's care. Like, whenever a loving God gives a law, it's motivated by his love in mind through all this, right? And so remember the people that he's first giving these Ten Commandments to. Remember who they were? The book of Exodus? Slaves? They had just come out of Egypt, right? Where 24/7, 365, they were told by Pharaoh, you must produce, you must make, you are my slave, right? And now God leads them out of slavery and he commands them, take a day off. It's not all work all the time, right? That's the original people who this original law was given to, a group of slaves that were forced to work 24/7, 365, that God is now commanding in a caring, loving way, saying 6 days and one day. You need a day. You're a finite creature, man. You can't go 24/7, 365 without the battery in some way emerging on your life. And it'll show up in a variety of ways, man. You probably, like, your phone won't just go black screen right away, right? You'll start acting out in some other ways. You'll start feeling burnt out. You'll start lashing out. And all this is because you need a nap. You need to rest, as grandma says in that kind of way. This is God's instruction to us, reminding us of our finiteness and saying that's okay. You need a day. And in this day, giving some guidelines about how we recharge, how we plug into this outlet of Sabbath rest that's going to recharge us, recalibrate us, and resend us out for a life of purpose and significance in union to him. That's who God gave these Ten Commandments to, always laced with his care for his people in knowing best how the user of manual life is meant to function and meant to work. So the Sabbath is a rule, but it's a rule laced with God's care. Secondly, what do we learn in Scripture about Sabbath? Sabbath is a rhythm. Sabbath is a rhythm. It says, 6 days you shall labor and do your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. There's a rhythm of life to take. The picture I keep getting of rhythm, maybe it's because I don't have it, is dancing. The rhythm of dancing there. And you get the picture. When dancing is done in rhythm, isn't it a beautiful, artistic thing? It can be intimate between two different people, just dancing and moving in motion with one another. When dancing is done out of rhythm, it's ugly, right? It can be painful. Stepping on toes and things like that, it can lose connection. Like if your partner zigs and you zag, you're losing connection in all that, right? When dancing is done in rhythm, it's great, it's beautiful, it's intimate. When you lose your rhythm, it's painful, it's ugly, it can be distancing in that way. And Sabbath is a rhythm of our life. When it's done, it can be beautiful, it can be artistic, it can lead you closer to God and closer to other people. When it's not done, when it's done wrongly in some ways, it can lose connection and just be ugly. Jesus is having many conversations in the New Testament about the Sabbath rhythm of life. Some have made Sabbath an ugly thing. It's a list of do's and do nots. And it's because God just wants you to follow this law, not necessarily because he's loved you in this law. And so Jesus is trying to uncover with them, what is Sabbath really about? And what's at the center of this principle that he's trying to bring out and to show what the Father's heart was in Sabbath? We're going to get into that in a moment there. But seeing this rhythm, this interchange. And it's all the way back at the beginning of creation where we see this rhythm playing out. Genesis 2, that second chapter of Scripture, second page says this: the seventh day God had finished the work he'd been doing. And so on the seventh day, he rested from his work. God blessed the seventh day and he made it holy because on it he rested from all the work of creating he had done. And as Jesus will say elsewhere, God's not resting because he's tired. He's resting to model something for us. And that is this rhythm in this that I think models actually humility in this, right? Because I don't know about you, but one of the struggles that I have at Sabbath sometimes is my complaint to God, God, there's more to be done. God, the reason why I'm requesting time is because I don't have enough time to get all that this is done. And so we need more time to do this. At least that's part of my rubber meets the road with Sabbath itself. And yet I'm slapped over the face with passages like this where God takes a day to rest, at least in creation week, at least as the model itself, highlighting what he had wired into humanity in that way. And so really what I find myself doing, if I'm saying, God, I've got too much to do to take a day off, really what I find myself doing is I'm saying, God, my job is harder than yours, right? Because I don't got time to take some time off. Even if you had time to create everything in the cosmos and still have a day of rest, well, God, you don't got my job, huh? My job's a little bit harder in that way. That's what I find myself saying to God if I take that logic in mind, that I'm too busy, and God, yet in his creation week, took a time off for the rhythm of work and rest and the beauty of that dancing rhythm in it. We're going to come back to that idea in the how-tos of Sabbath in just a moment there. We'll read this. Once again, one of those to file in the back of your mind. The Lord said to Moses at Mount Sinai. Actually, I'm not going to read all this. This is Leviticus 23 and 25. That's where you'll find both these passages on Sabbath rest and pausing for sacred assembly, and also the planetary need for Sabbath rest. God instructed his people in Leviticus 25 that they, as an agricultural society, they were to take 1 year off of no planting even. And God actually challenges them a couple verses later. The reason why he says them to do it, he says, I will send such a blessing in the sixth year that the land will yield enough for 3 years. And so God, in his rhythm for his agricultural society, is inviting them to let the planet even rest. See, the Sabbath law wasn't just for people. It was with the planet in mind. And God may be knowing best, too, how the land needs a year to follow. For the longest time, farmers would practice a following technique too, that the land would have a rest or a rhythm of where you plant and what you plant so that the land could even rest and rejuvenate the nutrient in the land so that the year thereafter could even be more fruitful in that combining. God had commanded that back in the Old Testament to his people in that kind of a society, which I think just shows the rhythm. not only of the individuals, but the planet that we live in as creatures of our Creator. Just hold on to that one a moment too, because it's going to come into play with some steps in recreation. Third thing that the scriptures, just a scripture look on Sabbath says, is to never forget the reason for Sabbath. It's never just about a rule, and it's never even just about a rhythm. There's a reason that highlights both of those two things that we're getting at in Sabbath, and it's even in the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath day, keeping it holy. There's the rule, the rhythm. 6 days to labor, seventh day to rest. But here's the reason. It's a Sabbath to the Lord your God. There's a direction in this resting, and that direction is Godward, to the Lord your God. And Jesus is going to pick up on this yet again too. The reason, the motivation between Sabbath and why God has made this for mankind is so that we could discover at a larger point of who God is and what he's up to in our life and in our world, right? Relationships need time, and Sabbath gives us time. Why? To invest in the relationship that we have with God that will flow into our relationships with our spouses, with our friends, with our coworkers, with every other relationship that matters on this side of earth. We need that relationship to flow into those relationships there. And Sabbath is God's gift to us, the direction that's Godward to flow then otherward, to love God and to love people, as Jesus would say is the greatest commandment. And it closes in this way, therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. This relational aspect somehow funnels blessings then into our life and into others' lives that are around us. Our life and others' lives around us. Hold on to that one too, okay? I'm asking you to hold on to a lot of things. I realize this. Take good notes or just revisit those sermon, those scripture notes in there, because you'll want to dig deeper into what does the Bible say about Sabbath, and those are some of the references that you can look at in that in mind. So how do we do this? How do we do this then? Or what is Sabbath looking leading into that? Before we even get there, Jesus has a conversation. He's walking through the grain fields. Disciples are walking along, and they begin to pick some heads of grain. That's a no-no in Jesus' day. That's Sabbath breaking laws if the Sabbath is all about the law itself. They're breaking rules. And the Pharisees are going to call Jesus' disciples out on this. They say to him, look, why are they doing what's unlawful in the Sabbath? This is Jesus' comment that's getting to the reasoning for the Sabbath in the first place. He says to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. AKA, he's talking about this being God's good gift to us, right? God's not trying to straitjacket us with another law to obey. God's gifting us with a day to plug into him and to plug into relationships that matter. And he closes with this word, so the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. What's Jesus getting at to the bottom line statement, the reasoning behind Sabbath? The Son of Man is Lord of it. It's all crescendoing to Christ. It's all about connecting to him, and in that connection, finding every other connection that matters. How to go about your work in a right way. How to have human relationships in that right direction. It all ties together with that in some way, shape, or form. So like I said, we're coming back to that in just a moment. Let's come back to all those things in this way as we just do some steps on Sabbath keeping. There's going to be more conversations that Jesus has about how to fulfill the Sabbath. One of these has to do with the healing of a man, and Jesus gets to the reasoning. Does the law permit good on the Sabbath, or is it a day for doing evil? Is it a day to save life or to destroy it? Jesus goes to church on the Sabbath day, and in the midst of the Sabbath service, he notices someone that's got a health problem. Deformed hand, there's swelling of the body that's abnormal, and everyone's eyes are turning on Jesus to see what's he going to do on the Sabbath or what's he not going to do, right? And that's what Jesus is speaking to right here. He tells that person to stand up in front of everyone, and then he says this word, does the law permit good deeds on the Sabbath or a day for evil? Does it save life or does it destroy life? Because there's a life that's hurting and that's needing healing, and everyone knows Jesus has the power to do it, and so they're wondering, is he going to do it on a day that's supposed to be his off day? And Jesus asks that question, and no one says a thing. And then Jesus does this. He looks at them angrily. It takes a lot to get Jesus angry. We don't have that often in scriptures. There are some instances, but it takes a lot. Kind of shows how exasperated Jesus is in this moment. And he was saddened. This is the reason of his anger. He was deeply saddened by their hard hearts. They were missing it. They thought it was about the rule keeping and not about the relational piece of what God is wanting to flow into a life and through a life. They were so hung up on the law that they forgot the love component. And so it says this. He said to the man, hold out your hand. That was where the issue was. This is where Jesus is speaking into. And at once the man held out his hand, he was restored. And at once the Pharisees went away. They met with the supporters of Herod to plot how they might kill Jesus. This is just one of many Sabbath showdowns where Jesus is trying to get at the reasoning of Sabbath. Not for man to straitjacket into, but for man to be served and build up for doing good deeds, not bad deeds, to save lives, not destroy lives. This is applicable, I think. So many of our jobs and so many of you in the working world, chances are many of your jobs have a two-day weekend. Not all jobs, but a lot of the jobs probably have a two-day weekend. And so there is some flexibility, especially if those 2 days stay consistent in some ways. If it is the weekend or 2 consistent days through the week, you know what days you have off. The rhythm of life, right, is 6 days to work, 1 day to rest. And so if you've got 2 days by your employer, that's just a gift. That's a gravy in some different way. And some jobs don't have that in a different way. And yet just realizing this of our weekly rhythm, what we can do and what we can't do, even if the days shift. And we'll get into this too. It's probably not so much about a day itself, right? You notice a lot of this discussion was about the seventh day itself. And yet for the last 2,000 years, the church has been talking about Sunday, the first day of the week, being a Sabbath day of the week. What's changing about the days? Well, it's done intentionally and specifically, and we actually talked about that earlier through the year, about why the day is Sunday and not the Saturday in that way. And that has to do with Jesus being the Lord of the Sabbath, one of those scriptures that we had just read at. On Sunday, the Lord of the Sabbath does something significant. He rises from the dead. It's that Easter moment. And so Christians have gathered on Sunday to remember what Jesus has done. And Colossians 2, one of those references, once again, in your message outline, will speak to that and the significance, not so much of the days, but of the Savior. To keep Jesus Lord of the Sabbath, it's not about a Saturday, it's not about a Sunday, it's not about a Monday, it's not about a Tuesday. It's about making him the center of the day so that that day can flow out then into your 6 other days of the week. Is any of this making sense? Feel like I'm losing in some different ways up here in that. And so we'll just pause and call a time out. I had originally set to have a little question and answer time at the wake of this. And maybe that would have been good to do. Hindsight's 20/20. Maybe the second service will get something a little bit different than the first service will in that kind of way. But I think this can be one of those topics that maybe is best through a dialogue rather than a monologue. And so I'm just going to put that out there in the 30-minute timeout, 30-second timeout, I guess. 30-minute time, maybe I do have that too, huh? 30-second timeout. If you have a question or if you have a comment, feel free to email me or call the church office or take me out for a donut. I always give that option for you on the table so that we can discuss about how would this look like in real life, in real time and space, knowing your real schedule or our real schedule. What I'm going to do in the next 15 minutes is highlight what it looks like in my schedule. And you can take this or leave this how it might apply or might not apply to your life. I do think the principle is clear. God has made us work best in a rhythm of life between work and rest. And the both are needed. Don't go all rest. Don't go all work, because scripture is going to go on both sides of that caveat of the dangers on both of those. And some of them are obvious. But to find this rhythm of life between work and rest, and not all work is the work that we collect a paycheck from either. Okay, and so we got to define what is classified as work and what isn't. And so let me try to get practical. Like I said, it might be more practical in some of those other outlets of a dialogue, and you can do that through email or through stopping by the church office or taking me out for a donut or some other avenue, but we can talk about that further. Steps to Sabbath, this is just what I found helpful. I will share with you in just a moment that I've been trying intentionally to practice Sabbath for about 15 years now. And so I've learned some things and I've failed at some things that maybe can be helpful for all of us of living into this, of what we've discovered about Sabbath, and I'm going to try to share some of those at this point there. The first thing, a practical step to Sabbath, is there needs to be rest in some way, shape, or form. The word Sabbath, that Hebrew root word, actually means to cease, to stop, to rest in some way, shape, or form. And so how this applies is my Sabbath day has to look different than my previous 6 days. For me, just practically speaking, I am often up here most weeks, 6 days of the week, in some way, shape, or form. And so for me, on my Sabbath day, I don't come here. It's just one way that I try to cease from the ordinary rhythms of life and to stop, to cease, to Sabbath in some way, shape, or form. The phone, I think maybe this is one of the biggest ways of Sabbath in us. I will tell you, on my Sabbath day, intentionally, I try to walk away from the phone, at least for major chunks, not forever. And I will screen my calls more heavily on my Sabbath day. My Sabbath day, by and large, is Monday. 80% of the time, it will fall on a Monday. And so if you call me or if you text me on a Monday, there may be lengthier times of me getting back, or I might not get back to you until Tuesday. I kind of leave that to my discretion in that way of knowing that I just need a day to cease, to get out of the regular rhythms. With that said, there's times where there's a phone call or there's a text message that is an emergency need that needs immediate attention, right? Jesus gave that illustration with that man with the deformed hand in that service. He'll actually give in a parallel passage in Matthew chapter 11, another one of those references in your message outline. There's going to be an excerpt where Jesus is dialoguing about Sabbath and he says, who, if your donkey or if your sheep falls into a pit, won't lift them out, even if it's on a Sabbath day? That would be classified as working. You don't lift your donkey or sheep. That would be working with the animal. And yet Jesus says, if that donkey or that animal's in the emergency, you're going to it, right? How much more important is people? And so if there is an emergent request that I try to use discernment over, then yes, I'm going to lift that donkey or sheep out of that hole in that kind of way, a way we try to apply Sabbath in that way, but doing something different. Out of the normal routine of life for the sake of ceasing, resting, and being reminded that ultimately we're not infinite, that we're not the Savior, that we're not God, right? We have these reminders regularly that we need, and Sabbath is one of those. God can work always, you can't. And so take a day off, rest, get away in some way, shape, or form. The second step to Sabbath that I think is important, we got to recenter in that day. And by recenter, I mean worship. Leviticus 23:3 is God's instruction to people that you don't forget sacred assembly on the Sabbath. That is, do church in some way, shape, or form. For those of you that Sunday falls on the Sabbath, that's easy to do. For a pastor, right, the only day of the week that I work is Sunday, huh? That's a joke. Please laugh at that, okay? And so my Sabbath isn't in a Sunday capacity. My Sabbath oftentimes is a Monday. But the importance of worshiping in some sort on Monday is important. I've shared with you on numerous occasions, oftentimes a pastor needs preached to. And so on a Monday, often what you'll find me doing is listening to a sermon podcast in some way, shape, or form. I like to cook dinner. We'll get into that. And so oftentimes we'll be cooking dinner and listening to a podcast of a preacher being preached to in that kind of way. Oftentimes you'll hear, if we're home on a Sabbath day, on our screen will be Pandora just playing worship music, just setting an environment of worship taking place in the house. Little ways that I try to intentionally just recenter. And in that recentering to worship, who is God and what is he up to through the preached word and through music being sung in the house and in that sphere? A chance to worship and wire worship in your Sabbath keeping in that way. Third thing, what's Sabbath mean? There's a point of recreating. A point of recreating. And we get back to that instruction about the Sabbath year in Leviticus 25. That Sabbath is meant to be fun. Remember, it's God's gift to you. What helps add life to your life? Because you're plugging into an outlet, remember? That image of a battery going down, when you plug it into the outlet, it starts going in the other direction. It starts adding life. Jesus' comments when he's healing on the Sabbath is he's saying, what does good and what does evil, right? Is the Sabbath to save life or is it to take life? What saves life? What heals life? What brings the goodness out of life? Those are gifts from God. And they can and should be woven into your Sabbath activities. And so I shared with you a moment ago, I like food. And in the liking of food is the cooking of food. And so oftentimes when we have a big meal through the week, we're just trying to get calories into the system to feed the masses in that way. And yet on Sabbath day, we will have a special meal, some finer dining in that kind of a way that just takes time and enjoys the process of food making in that way. We try to weave that in some way, shape, or form. What are some things that add to your life? I love spending time with my kids. And so we will intentionally maybe go away on the Sabbath to a zoo, to a playground, to you fill in the blank there, but just to spend some time together recreating and being reminded of what God is up to. I've shared with many of you on multiple occasions, my favorite part of vacation very rarely is the sight that we see. And that doesn't mean that we don't enjoy the sights that we've seen and the locations that we've been, but my favorite part of vacation is that I noticed some things about my family that I totally was clueless to. The good or the bad of that noticing, I might add, too, but that I was totally clueless to in the typical daily grind, right? Because you're just rushing. You're trying to get that to-do list done. And so it's one activity, the next activity, the next activity. In vacation, you get a chance to breathe and to see some things that you don't normally see some things. I will tell you, much is the same in my practice of Sabbath. That is our family's favorite day. Oftentimes, because you just have time together to laugh and to enjoy and to smile and to eat or to do those things, and that just brings out the time. It's God's gift to us. And he's woven some of those things in, and the more you take those times, the more you get the chance to recenter and recreate and be refreshed to then do what needs to be done in the rhythm between work and rest in that way. Fourth thing that I found has been helpful for Sabbath keeping, keep it regular. Keep it regular in some ways. If you have a consistent schedule in work, then you know what regular day. My work schedule changes at times. By and large, my off day is Monday. And so as I shared with you, probably 80% of the time, Monday will be my Sabbath day. And yet there's some meetings that I don't schedule, that I don't coordinate, that land on a Monday. And so I've got some flexibility with my work. On those weeks, oftentimes my Sabbath will be a Friday. And so I'm able to do that. Some of your jobs have some of that flexibility. Others of you don't in that kind of a way. And so we got to be a little bit more creative. That's what I said. We'll dialogue together. But is there a 24-hour stretch? Is there a 24-hour stretch on any given week where you can kind of play and know and weave some of these things in? It can be helpful. It can be therapeutic. It can be stress relieving, anxiety relieving. If we find this regular rhythm between work and rest, your maker wired you that way. And it will be for your benefit as we take steps towards practicing this in our spiritual life and our life with others. Fifthly there, we're getting to some of the stuff we covered about Jesus, like I said, all that in your notes in that way. Fifthly, and maybe most importantly, remember that Sabbath is a relational piece. And that is, it's about your relationship with God that flows into every other relationship. The Son of Man, right, is Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus' words in Matthew chapter 2. And yet again, he says it time and time again. Colossians 2 is another one of those instances where Jesus is reminding us it's about him and him being the reality. Let me just read that one for you. Colossians, it's a letter to people trying to follow Christ in the everyday world. They got jobs too. They're trying to put food on the table too. They're trying to raise families too. And they're trying to do this following Jesus. It's in the course of that transaction where Paul writes to them some instructions about Sabbath days. And he says this: don't let anyone condemn you for what you eat or drink, celebrating certain holy days or new moon ceremonies or Sabbaths. He's getting into all some of these features there that ancient Christians would have some questions on. One of those is something that pertains to us, Sabbaths. These rules are only shadows of the reality yet to come, and Christ himself is that reality. Summary, what's Sabbath all about? It's about Jesus. What's life all about? It's about Jesus. And the more that we discover Jesus, the more that we find he adds life to us. The book of the Bible opens that says, in the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Why does the book of the Bible open like that? Why is that in Genesis chapter 1? It's not concerned with holding up a mirror for Adam and Eve. That's not the image that's being expressed. The reason why God opens up his book by saying mankind was made in his image is because he's teaching us thoughtfully that the more you look to him, the more you reflect him, the more you grow closer to him, the more it's going to be for your benefit. The more you're going to discover who you really are. You were made to reflect him. And so the closer you grow to him, the more you grow and mature in him, the more you're going to discover about who you are and where you fit into this planet and this place. And so if we discover that reality that is Jesus, if we make Jesus our focus, we start to discover what Jesus had made us and manufactured us for. That puts a smile fully not only on our face but on our soul then. That continues for all of eternity. As we image him, We reflect that out into the world that we live in the right directions. And so, yes, it might come off as a rule. It might come off as learning new habits and finding new rhythms in life, and yet it's all for your benefit. As we discover why he made us and what he's made us for, it discovers the fuller vista of what God has made. And so let me just close with some three stories, okay? I keep flipping a coin about this story, and so I'll just give you both stories with this one, okay? First story on Sabbath that comes across, this is a story that I don't know if it's true or not in this way, and yet I know the other two are true in this way, but this is something that just stuck out to me when I was first hearing about Sabbath and trying to weave it into the rhythm of my life, and it was a story about the days traveling out west, covered wagons, Yukon Trail, and all those different vistas in that way, that people... There were two routes to kind of take in the Oregon Trail, and one of those that they would take is you had to fight against weather, you had to fight against the ticking of the clock, and so many would think that with all this fight, with this time crunch, we just got to go. 24-7, 365, 7 days a week, we're going to drive our beasts as far as they'll go, rest for the night, and drive them some more, and so 7 days a week, they tried to do that. There was another camp that was trying to do it the rhythm of God's way, that is 6 days and one day off. And the ones that took the day off found themselves arriving not only faster, but fuller to their final destination. That is, they discovered that their beasts had a moment to rest and refresh. And because of that rhythm of rest and refreshment, they were actually able to go further in the 6 days than what they could have gone in that seventh day. Like I said, don't know if that's true. I actually tried to look some of that up in some of the books and materials that I thought I had found out in originally. Couldn't do it, but it stuck out in my mind. And so take it or leave it. What I do find interesting... We're not in the covered wagon days, but there are some companies, Hobby Lobby, Chick-fil-A, they kind of known and pride themselves around trying to weave some Christian principles into their business practices. I saw the figures in 2018. I don't know the figures for 2019. This may have changed. I don't think they're out that yet to public consumption. But in 2018, Chick-fil-A, they work 14% less days than most other fast food industries. 14% because they're closed 52 days of the year, right? Every Sunday they're closed. And yet in 14% fewer days, Chick-fil-A made $4.6 million across their average franchise. Their average franchise made $4.6 million. That's third ranking in fast food chains. The big one, McDonald's, 7 days a week, across their franchises, they netted $2.8 million. They worked 14% more days, and yet across the franchises, they netted $2.8 million. And part of that is a numbers game, right? There's less Chick-fil-A's than McDonald's because McDonald's are everywhere in that kind of a way. And yet it's just interesting to me, the net profits for Chick-fil-A per franchise were double that who works 14% fewer days. And I don't know the figures on Hobby Lobby or those different things, but it's just interesting to me. And some different ways of what business and what tactics are. And there is something to said about job satisfaction, not just net growth of income too, right? Of what is the workers saying and all that, and I don't have those statistics on it, but just a modern day, maybe, covered wagon story, you might say, in some of the economics that are coming out, and even fast food industries in that way. I'll go personal for you in a moment there. The busiest point of my life, actually the first open door of the busiest point of my life, was college. Personally, that was the first time in life where I realized, hey, there's not enough time to do everything that you want time for in that way. And so that's continued in that way, but college was that first entry point. And no joke there, I will tell you personally, from 6 a.m. till 10 p.m., I was always doing something in college. And part of that goes back to some workaholic tendencies, maybe in my personality, this desire to, you know, win the next trophy or tackle the next mountain or something like that. That's some of the things that God is rubbing in that can be a strength or a weakness, depending on the day or depending on the setting in that kind of way, or what God's working on for me personally. But in college, there were three balls to really juggle for myself. I played college athletics, football and track itself. And so that means that there was never a season where I wasn't in season for something. Because the moment the football season ended was the time that indoor track started. And once indoor track was done, it was time for outdoor before you started the summer training, yet again, to start football season. So there was always this constant, you were in some sort of sport in that way. And academically, I knew that I would have to go to grad school to be a pastor. And that's 90 plus hours of grad school education that I knew I just didn't have the funding for to just pay without being in the eyeballs of my debt there. And so I was trying to always be diligent with my academics, hoping in some way to land some scholarships, knowing that that was coming. And so all that to be said, it was a perfect storm, right? Some perfectionist tendencies that wants to do the best and excel in all these things. And yet you got this constant revolving door between athletics and academics. And I was trying to court a woman at that too. Julie and I were high school sweethearts. And we will tell you of many dates in college that were spent studying books rather than courting one another, with the exception of Sundays. 6 a.m. till 10 p.m., we were either in a practice, in a class, studying a book, or in 30 minutes time slot, because no joke, I would calculate how much time can I afford to spend at the cafeteria before the next thing has to do. And so you shovel calories, and your mouth is quick before going to the next class, or the practice, or the workout, or whatever was in between that. And so the one exception to that was Sunday mornings, where we would sleep in. And I would sleep until 8 or 9 o'clock, and the first thing I would do then, after going to the cafeteria, we'd meet at the cafeteria, and then we would go to church together. Different location of the church, and then following church, we'd go back to the cafeteria, where we didn't look at the clock, we just enjoyed eating food together, and eating food with any friend that came in and didn't have to rush out. And the rest of the day, we would spend together in some way, shape, or form, putting puzzles together, or doing anything that wasn't book work related. Which meant that there were many Monday exams where I'm kind of sweating bullets because, hey, I could have spent more time studying, right? And I kind of maybe needed that more time to study. And yet I can tell you personally, God filled in the gaps in surprising ways. And that's not to say that this is going to be easy or that there aren't some sweaty palms in that route and something like that. But I truly discovered God helped me accomplish some things athletically and academically that just weren't in the works just by skill alone. That wasn't who I was or wasn't that bright in that way. And yet God did some things in that. And not only that, I'm convinced the reason why I'm married to Julie today is because of Sabbaths. Because Monday through Saturday, it was a rush. And we may have been in the same proximity, but we weren't connecting like a married couple could or should in that way. And so what takes place there is that Julie has a long line of suitors. And here's the scum Justin, right, that probably isn't doing what he needs to be doing. Fortunately for Sabbath, that God did some work in that Sabbath that knitted souls together, that dreamed together, that stuck it out together, that landed here together in that kind of a way. And I'm convinced it was Sabbath that held our relationship together, that held the future together in so many times and places in that way. And so I will tell you personally, don't do it perfectly. But in those five things, ways in which intentionally try to do Sabbath, it has done wonders, not only in the college days, but still in our family and the funness and the fondness that we have connected those days together. So that's one story. I wasn't going to put up that photo, but I included it in the original PowerPoint, and I can't undo it right there to get this next slide, which is a person that I want to show you in this way. And this is Eric Little. Eric Little, does that name ring a bell to anyone? Good, I'm telling a story no one's heard in this way. 1924, Eric Little is an Olympic athlete. And his story is found in the movie. They made a movie in the 80s called Chariots of Fire. Did someone just say that? Susan knows Chariots of Fire. It's a movie made out in the 80s there, but it's about Eric Little's story called The Flying Scotsman. He did not run the right way, okay? He's an Olympic athlete that was known, really, really made fun of for his running technique because he would hit his head up to the heavens, and they said he looked like a cat clawing through the air in his running tactic there. And so not exactly an epiphany of running form, but his story that carries on has to take place in the 1924 Olympics that were in Paris, France that year. And Little's specialty was the 100-meter dash. But he found out months before that the 100-meter dash, the prelims for that, was to be run on a Sabbath day. And something for his convictions that he just couldn't do. And so months before the Olympic Games, his best event, the event that he had the greatest chance at winning a gold in, he scratched out of. And he instead started training for the 200 and 400 meters to represent England. And as you can imagine, a lot of people derided him for that decision, right? What are you doing? This is an opportunity of a lifetime, and these don't come by. You're the favorite in this event. What are you doing? And yet, because of his convictions on Sabbath, he just wasn't able to run. And he ended up running in the 200 and the 400 meters. The 400 was the last of his event. He got bronze medal in the 200, not his strongest event, but got the bronze. 400, he wasn't even supposed to make the finals for. His best time, I believe, was 49-something. And that wasn't even going to compare with the Americans that were the heavy favorites in the 400 meters. And yet before that race day, one of the American teammates was said to have handed him, he's an Englishman, but an American teammate handed him a piece of paper that was written a scripture passage from God that says, "He who honors me, I will honor." It was a Bible passage taken, I don't know from what book, but he just gave that. And Little ended up winning that race and setting a world record that would stand for the next 12 years in that event, winning gold in that way. I'm not telling you. Every single time you practice Sabbath, it's going to go gold, okay? All right? You're going to get the scholarship or you're going to get the trophy. Don't hear those words in any which way. But I do think there is something to this way that God has wired us, that when we enter into that wiring, we find it works better than the alternative. Like that there is more life to us, that we can actually do more in those 6 days with people or with our profession. We can do more of because he's given us that outlet, that recharging, that recentering. We've plugged into him that pours forth then in those other 6 days in a different way, shape, or form. Like I said, might not win golds, might not get the scholarships, might not all those things, and yet I have a feeling that when we honor God, he does write something, if not on our faces, on our souls, that carries over. There's been countless people that have won gold medals since 1924, and yet some still remember a lone individual in 1924 and tell his story. Why? Not because of just his great achievement, but because he did a great achievement with great convictions of following his creator through all of that in that way. And lo, what it would be said for us, huh? That God would do a work in our midst and in our rank because we're honoring him in some way. And so I'm going to invite the worship team to come forward. We're going to close a little bit differently. We skipped over, yes, worship team can come forward. We skipped over our last Sabbath Sunday where we did deep breaths, 77 seconds of ceasing, and we sang a specific song. The song that we're going to sing in just a moment about breathing. It's about Sabbath. It's about recentering and remembering what God is up to and allowing that plug-in point then to flow into our other points of life. I want to invite you, before you say the song, 7 deep breaths together. Let's go through our Sabbath exercises together. In through the nose, out through the mouth. 7 times. And for the next 77 seconds, why 7? 7 is associated with Sabbath. There's no agenda. Keep breathing, by all means. That's a good thing. But just allow these little snippets of Sabbath to then grow greater and greater into our life until we discover the greatness of why God has given us these instructions in the first place. And so 77 seconds, I invite you, just cease, and then we will close the service with our Sabbath song, Breathe. 70 seconds of just ceasing.